they do.
Okay, and on that note, appreciate you being with us, both of you, actually. Author and former U.S. diplomat Michael Springman, out of Washington, D.C. Always a pleasure, Michael, and Islamic Human Rights Commission, Reza Kazem, out of London. Thank you so much. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on Another Debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
We draw your attention to verses 54 and 55 of chapter Araf from the Holy Quran, recited by Mr. Ali Asghar Burumand.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Inna رَبَّكُمُ اللَّهُ الَّذِي خَلَقَ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ فِي سِتَّةِ أَيَّامٍ خَلَقَ السماوات والأرض في ستة أيام ثم استوى على العرش ثم استوى على العرش الليل النهار يطلبه حثيثا والشمس والقمر والنجوم مسخرات ألا له الخلق والأمر تبارك الله رب العالمين ادعوا ربكم تضرعا صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Surely, your Lord is Allah, who created the heavens and the earth in six periods of time, and He is firm in power. He throws the veil of night over the day, which it pursues incessantly. And He created the sun and the moon and the stars, made subservient by His command. Surely, His is the creation and the command. Blessed is Allah, the Lord of the worlds. Call on your Lord humbly and secretly. Surely, He does not love those who exceed the limits.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei hails the role of the overseas branch of the country's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps. The U.S. top diplomat accuses China of challenging the world order as the two top economies remain at odds on a host of issues. And the Colombian president withdraws a tax reform bill that triggered several days of deadly protests in the Latin American country. It's good to have you with us. Now, starting with comments by leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has hailed the valuable role played by the country's Quds Force, that's the overseas branch of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. Ayatollah Khamenei said that the West is trying to keep Iran's foreign policy under its own influence and dominion, as in the pre-Islamic Revolution era. And that's why, the leader added, that the West is outraged and aggrieved every time Iran seeks to establish ties with Russia and China. He said the Americans have on numerous occasions prevented visits to Iran by senior officials from its Arab neighbors. Ayatollah Khamenei also spoke about sanctions against Iran. He said the best and most successful way to nullify the sanctions is a genuine effort to boost national production. The leader also touched upon the upcoming presidential election, saying that the polls are an important opportunity for the country. Ayatollah Khamenei stressed that elections have always been clean in Iran. Mustafa Khoshcheshma, a journalist and political analyst, says that the U.S. has been attempting to cut Iran's ties with the world through smear campaigns, but it has failed to achieve the objective.
It's highly important to note that Americans know pretty well that if they intend to make if they intend to maximize the effectiveness of their sanctions, they needed to contain Iran's economic power, especially in ties with the outside world, with the Russians as well as the Chinese, and also the regional states. But more important than that is that they always try to contain Iran's power, overall power. We're talking about various power components, not just the military or the nuclear industries, but Iran's scientific advancements and Iran's soft power, especially in the region. In the words of a former Pentagon, top Pentagon official, who said that we do not want to let Iran become a role model for the regional nations. It's understood why, when it comes to the regional nations and Iran's soft power in there, the Americans have been trying to alienate Iran, demonize Iran, running smear campaign about Iran's intentions. And that's why they've been doing their best to contain Iran's relations with the outside world, and they have failed, of course.
The U.S. president has reportedly said that Washington is not close to returning to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. According to a senior Israeli official, Joe Biden made the remark in a meeting with the head of the Israeli regime's intelligence service, Mossad, during a visit to Washington by an Israeli delegation. Biden reportedly said that the U.S. has a long way to go in talks with Iran before it agrees to return to full compliance. A spokesperson for the U.S. National Security Council, however, said that Mossad chief Yossi Cohen's meeting at the White House was with advisor Jake Sullivan and other national security officials, not with Biden. Now, developments come as Iran and the remaining signatories of the nuclear deal are holding talks in Vienna to revive the accord. In other news, the Yemeni army has conducted successful strikes on targets inside Saudi Arabia. The army saying that a missile and drone attacks targeted military sites at Najran Airport and the King Khalid Air Base in Qamis Mashhad. Our correspondent has more.
The new retaliatory attack has been carried out by the Yemeni army for a class of K2 drones and two ballistic missiles of Badr type attacked King Khalid Air Base in Asir and also other military targets in Najran Airport. This operation comes in retaliation for the ongoing Saudi war and siege against the Yemeni people. According to the Yemeni army, to the spokesman of the Yemeni army, all the operations launched against the Saudi airports are accurate. They have accurate information that the Saudi aircrafts are being launched from these airports. So the Yemeni army will continue targeting these airports to stop Saudi Arabia from using these civilian facilities for military purposes.
Now, top African military officials have confirmed the official start of the withdrawal of foreign troops from Afghanistan. And that's just after the departure of the first group of American military forces from the country. The move has received mixed reactions in Afghanistan.
U.S.-led NATO forces are spending their last months in Afghanistan, and this is good news for most American soldiers. They will finally witness the end of their mission in a country historically known as the Graveyard of Empires. This is why the U.S. war in Afghanistan has so far claimed the lives of 90,000 U.S.-led NATO troops and Afghan armed forces. However, military top brass in Kabul insists that there is zero chance of victory for the Taliban through militarism, despite the start of foreign troops withdrawal from Afghanistan on Saturday. This is because the Afghan government is now strong enough to counter terrorist groups on its own and also enjoys high popularity among locals.
The withdrawal of foreign forces has practically started. They will hand over their military bases and some of their military hardware to Afghan forces by the end of this week. We are strong enough and we can safeguard the nation on our own.
In the meantime, the Taliban have not welcomed the troop pullout by Washington, saying the U.S. had agreed to withdraw all foreign military forces from Afghanistan by the May 1st. This has paved the way for the Taliban to legitimize their acts of violence beyond May the 1st. Under such circumstances, civilians will once again turn into the main victims of violence in the war-weary country.
Foreign troops must leave our country, and the Taliban are also expected to respect people's demand, that is the silence of guns. There must be no war among ourselves after the withdrawal of foreign troops, and the Taliban need to realize this reality.
The Taliban are seeking excuses to keep saying no to peace. The postponement of the U.S. military withdrawal has now turned into a good pretext for them to wage more war and kill more defenseless civilians.
The Taliban have vowed to take any possible action because of what they call the violation of the Doha Agreement by Washington, that is the delay in the withdrawal of foreign troops from Afghanistan. However, what remains to be a bitter truth is that not many players seem to be ready to truly help Afghans see a day when there is no war and insecurity in their wounded homeland. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has accused China of acting more repressively at home and abroad over the past several years. In an interview with CBS News, Blinken blamed China for challenging the world order using its military, economic, and diplomatic capacities. The top U.S. diplomat, however, rejected any military confrontation with Beijing, saying that even to head in that direction is against the interests of both countries. The comments came days after President Biden, in his first address to Congress, underscored that he's not seeking conflict with China. He identified competition with China as his administration's greatest foreign policy challenge. Biden also pledged to maintain a strong military presence in the Indo-Pacific and boost technological development. The two top economies are at odds on a host of bilateral and international issues. Now, geopolitical analyst Brian Berletic says that the United States is the aggressor, not China, as the U.S. has multiple worldwide wars which undermine stability around the globe.
This is the United States insisting that it maintains primacy over the entire globe. When they say rules-based international order, they're talking about rules that benefit themselves, that they impose on others, and that they themselves don't follow. And it's interesting that the U.S. is accusing China of being repressive at home and being aggressive overseas when it's the United States, not China, that has multiple wars of aggression ongoing at the moment, killing people all around the globe with its military in countries where local people do not want them. And then for the U.S. to say that it's China that's the problem, that's undermining peace and stability around the globe, it's projection. It's projection on a geopolitical level.
The Colombian president says that he will withdraw a widely opposed tax reform bill following deadly protests across that country.
I am asking the Congress to withdraw the law proposed by the Finance Ministry and urgently process a new law that is the fruit of consensus in order to avoid financial uncertainty. The reform is not a whim. The reform is a necessity. To withdraw it or not was not the discussion. The real discussion is to be able to guarantee the continuity of social programs.
Ivan Duque had earlier said that tax rises were necessary to respond to the economic crisis brought on by the coronavirus pandemic. The tax reform withdrawal comes after 4 days of violent protests in the country that left multiple people dead. The bill caused outrage among many Colombians who say that they're already struggling to feed their families during the pandemic. Colombia's gross domestic product saw its sharpest crash in half a century, with the pandemic driving up unemployment rates. Now, in Brazil, officials reporting nearly 29,000 new confirmed COVID cases, and that brings the country's total closer to 15 million. Health authorities also registered 1,200 new fatalities, pushing the toll to over 407,000. The country remains the world's second worst by the pandemic in terms of fatalities. Elsewhere in Latin America, Mexico reported 1,000 new coronavirus cases and dozens more deaths. Total number of cases now nears 2,350,000, more than 217,000 fatalities as well. A political commentator, Bruno Biaglini, says that Brazilian President Bolsonaro has failed to be a good role model for his people when it comes to the fight against the coronavirus pandemic.
The extreme poverty of our people, the lack of trust in science, is spread by neo-Pentecostal Zionist preachers or so-called preachers, and the role model from Bolsonaro himself and Bolsonaro's family. The totality of it means to Brazilian people kind of 25%, 22% of support for Bolsonaro policies. For example, the army here, last year, they doubled, they tripled the production of chloroquine. Why? For nothing. Because Bolsonaro was spreading chloroquine, just like Trump in Brazil. The role model is a bad example for our people.
Now, in India, total COVID caseload has neared a grim milestone of 20 million as the country is struggling with curbing a deadly surge of the virus. The health ministry has registered more than 368,000 new infections in the past day. Total COVID deaths stand at 219,000. Monday marks the fifth straight day that India registered some 3,000 daily deaths. Hospitals are overwhelmed, and a shortage of medical oxygen is the most serious challenge. India's COVID-19 crisis is blamed on a new virus variant, as well as mass political gatherings and religious events. Our correspondent New Delhi, Munawar Zaman, says that a shortage of COVID vaccines has turned into a new challenge for India's crisis hit healthcare system.
Well, besides having the oxygen supplies, which is still a great concern, which is the biggest concern the healthcare system is struggling with, there is now a biggest trouble with vaccine shortage. Vaccine is something which is not easily available to states. States are struggling with the vaccination supplies. And if you know, the India's biggest vaccine supplier, the Serum Institute, its owner, Adar Poonawalla, has to leave the country. He has to leave India because he was getting threat calls from the elite class people or maybe some other groups. He had to leave the country to start production outside India.
Pakistan's relations with the EU have soured after European Parliament called for reviewing a trade deal which provides additional trade benefits to Pakistan. At the heart of the tension are rising anti-French sentiments and growing public demand to expel French ambassador over repeated incidents of blasphemy against the Prophet of Islam in France. Javed Rana has more.
Pakistan's federal parliament in Islamabad. The lower house of the parliament is preparing to resume a debate on whether or not to expel French ambassador over repeated incident of blasphemy in France against Islam's last prophet Muhammad. However, days before the resumption of parliamentary debate here, the European Union parliament has come up with what appears to be counter-resolution to pressurize Islamabad to prevent the expulsion of French envoy from Pakistan. The European Parliament has decided to review with Pakistan our trade agreement known as Generalized System of Preferential Plus or GPS Plus over what it calls a rising anti-French sentiments and mistreatment of minorities under blasphemy laws in Pakistan. Under this trade deal, Islamabad gets an estimated annual additional $1.5 billion trade benefits, which are far less than the economic losses Pakistan suffers almost every year because of mass unrest linked with Islamophobia in France. The frequent incidents of blasphemy in France has led to mass unrest across Pakistan.
The European Union is putting pressure on Pakistan, and they want them to weigh and to see whether this decision of expelling the French ambassador from Pakistan, will the government of Pakistan, will the people of Pakistan pay the price? Are they ready?
European Union's concerns go much beyond possibly expelling French ambassador.
Prime Minister Khan has crossed the Rubicon. EU policy towards countries that enable Islamic extremism must be resolute. Withdraw Pakistan's GSP Plus status now.
In an official reaction, Islamabad expressed disappointment with the European Union, pointing out that it reflects a lack of understanding in the context of blasphemy and associated religious sensitivities in Pakistan and elsewhere in the Muslim world.
None of the convict of the blasphemy law was ever executed in Pakistan after successful governments and superior judiciary allegedly buckled under pressure to set convicts free and led them to migrate and settle in Europe. This has led to lynching of 75 under trial prisoners and suspects amid reports of misuse of blasphemy law in isolated cases since 1987 onwards. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
At least 16 Nigerian soldiers have been killed in an ambush on a patrol in the Tahuwa region near the Mali border. Officials say six troops were injured in incidents, while one has gone missing. The vast desert area of Tahuwa in the west of the country sits close to the borders of both Mali and Burkina Faso. It's been plagued by insurgency since 2012. A march and attack by militants on three villages near the border with Mali left a total of more than 140 people dead. The attacks in western Niger are often attributed to groups affiliated to Al-Qaeda or Daesh terrorists. That's it for me for now. We'll be right back.
follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrents fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually, and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makes the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willst, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of thy forgiveness at its end. O he who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
The month of God. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, salam and welcome to the program. We are with you with another episode of the special series for Ramadan. In the last 10 days of this month, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, used to get prepared for further worship. It is narrated that he paid a special attention to i'tikaf in the blessed month of Ramadan. He would adhere to this tradition in every Ramadan. But in the year that the Battle of Badr took place, he couldn't do this as the war was in the month of Ramadan. Therefore, the Prophet performed i'tikaf for 20 days to compensate for the year before. As you know, the pilgrims of the symbolic house of God in Mecca, Kaaba, have to refrain from certain things when they want to enter the sacred mosque. When they wear the special garb, ihram, more than 20 things become forbidden for them. Ramadan is similar to Hajj, as certain things become forbidden for the person who fasts. The fourth infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Sajjad, peace upon him, says, Almighty God has made the month of Ramadan superior to other months with ample respects and famous virtues. Thus, a series of things that were halal in other months have been forbidden for reverence and respect of this month. And he has prohibited eating and drinking in this month for ennoblement of Ramadan. Dear listeners, no doubt, a person who stays in a mosque for i'tikaf in Ramadan will be more favored by God. According to the Islamic jurisprudence, material and financial atonement of fasting should be given to the poor. This can be given to poor relatives, but is forbidden to give it to one's family members who receive alimony. If the atonement is paid as money, it should be paid to charity institutions to buy food and give to poor people. The money for atonement cannot be spent for other uses such as cultural and social uses. The money shouldn't be less than the price of 750 grams of wheat. A patient who suffers from a chronic disease and cannot fast till the end of Ramadan or the next Ramadan, fasting as compensation is not obligatory for him, but he has to give 750 grams of wheat or rice and so on for each day. Dear friends, as we have said earlier, on the eve of the 19th of the blessed month of Ramadan in 40 AH, the renegade Abdurrahman ibn Muljam struck Imam Ali's head with a poisonous sword while the Imam was in mihrab, that is the niche of the mosque of Kufa. Imam Ali, peace upon him, was so dear for the Prophet of Islam and enjoyed such a lofty position with God that the Prophet would benefit any opportunity to inform people of his status. Once, he said to Imam Ali,
You are to me like Aaron to Moses, except that there will be no messenger after me. This hadith proves all merits of Aaron for Imam Ali, except that there won't be any messenger after Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The Prophet used to emphasize that Imam Ali would be the next leader of the Ummah after him. He said time and again that Imam Ali had been designated by God as the Prophet's vicegerent and the first Imam of the Ummah. Let us place God on oath by the lofty status of Imam Ali on these nights to forgive our sins and help us follow the Prophet and his Ahlul Bayt, his infallible progeny, peace upon them. Now let us recite a supplication that has been recommended for the eve of the 21st of the blessed month of Ramadan. O inserter of the night in the day and inserter of the day in the night, and bringer of the living out of the dead, and bringer of the dead out of the living, O provider of whomever you want without reckoning, O God, O compassionate, O God, O merciful, O God, O God, O God, you have the best names and lofty comparisons and grandeurs and bounties. I plead to you to bless Muhammad and progeny of Muhammad, and place my name on this night among the successful, and my spirit among the martyrs, and my good deed among the inhabitants of the highest point of paradise, and forgive my evil deeds, and I plead to you to grant me certitude, which accompanies with my heart, and faith, which takes doubt away from me, and make me satisfied with what you have distributed for me, and give us good in the world and good in the hereafter, and guard us against the punishment of burning fire, and give me a sustenance on this night, your remembrance and your gratitude, an enthusiasm toward you and returning to you, and assisting me in what you have assisted Muhammad and progeny of Muhammad. Greetings to him and them.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Economic divide.
The JCPOA or Iran nuclear deal negotiations are happening in Vienna. That's between Iran and the P4 plus one without the U.S., with the Europeans using shuttle diplomacy with the U.S. What has been the outcome of the talks? That is one of the key questions, isn't it? Well, here are two simple ways of looking at it. First, Some progress has been made, but there's still a ways to go. That is something that we keep hearing time and again. Well, the second one is an even harsher one, which we don't hear much of. Almost nothing. That almost sounds like the talks are at an impasse. Well, the issue of sanctions appears to be the major sticking point, which the U.S. is concocting its own version of what sanctions should be lifted and probably when they should be lifted. For example, Iran has demanded that the U.S. remove 1,600 or so sanctions that's been imposed on Iran after Trump pulled out of the accord. Quite a lot, isn't it? Hi, I'm Kaveh Tahwahi. Stay tuned to today's program since it will be jam-packed. We will have two featured studio guests and two guests from abroad to get a deep look at Iran and the chances of a nuclear agreement breakthrough and whether this agreement is actually to the benefit of Iran or not.
The Grand Hotel in Vienna, Austria. Site of where the Iran nuclear talks are taking place. So far, 5 sessions in 2 weeks. Any breakthroughs?
We are, though, nonetheless, pleased that Iran has continued to agree to engage in discussions, in direct discussions with us and with our partners on how we move forward.
2 working groups are mapping out what needs to be done. 1, a list of measures that need to be taken by Iran, and another, a list of sanctions that have to be removed by the U.S. And now a third group is going to work on a matter of what's called sequence.
The most important question is to talk about the sequence, because we have already talked about measures, and we have now focused more on the question of sequence to make sure that the U.S., who has left the JCPOA, should come back first, should lift all its sanctions first, and then Iran would follow after the verification.
The U.S. now has imposed about 1,600 sanctions. Many of them are non-nuclear related, and they even relabeled some of the ones that were nuclear related to seem that they were related to terrorism. So to dismantle this whole thing, the Iranians want the U.S. to withdraw all the sanctions that were imposed after January 2016.
Let's review that sequence one more time. The U.S. would have to come back to the JCPOA first and lift all sanctions. Iran would then follow after verification. Iran's foreign minister also talked about this, as seen here, which is identical to Araghchi's blueprint that was presented.
Time to bring in our first featured guest of the show. We have the pleasure of having Ali Rezvanpour. He's a political analyst and an analyst of the Caucasus Affairs at the Expediency Discernment Council. Mr. Rezvanpour, welcome to this program.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us. My first question is a referral back to the previous JCPOA. Now, once that deal was enacted, Iran, according to reports, didn't reap the benefits of what it was entitled to under that agreement. Companies were afraid to do business with Iran because of either sanctions that may have been incurred on them, and also on the issue of human rights. They just didn't want to get into making deals with Iran. Was that the case, and will this time around, will those types of problems be alleviated?
Yeah, it's a very good question. Thank you very much. I would like to state that, you know, by taking part in JCPOA meeting right now, which is being held in different parts of sessions in Vienna, one of the most important issues, which is the concern of our Iranian people, our supreme leader, is that we should be very cautious about the process, about the space of the negotiations, about the content of the negotiations. We should be careful and not just giving the permission to the negotiators, I mean the 4+1 or also 5+1, to direct the negotiations. If they wanted to direct the negotiations, we should once and for all just retreat from that, I mean, meeting and then insist on our own demands. As you mentioned about the, I mean, sanctions, about human rights, about secondary sanctions, preliminary sanctions, the Western side, I mean, the 5+1 group are not trustable, all of them, because once the JCPOA was concluded, you know, after a couple of months, they imposed again some sanctions, which we were supposed to just, you know, be relieved from those crippling sanctions. So in this process, Iranian negotiators should be careful about insisting on their own demands by just referring to our Supreme Leader statements that the Western side is not trustable. And after that, just try not to give the permission to the Western side to direct the negotiations. Otherwise, we won't get any benefit from those meetings. You know, our Supreme Leader is very clever regarding political issues. He says that, you know, the American side is trying to impose some suggestions which are disdainful, which are harmful to the Iranian benefits. That's why we do not, you know, just have any confidence in their statements, in their suggestions. By keeping the self-interest, your opposite side is insisting on one principle. What is mine is mine. What is yours is negotiable. This is a principle of international relationships. Those countries who are taking part in different kinds of negotiations with Iranian side are insisting on Iran to just take back different kinds of steps in which Iran has taken by just reneging on its own promises. The U.S. government just triggered Iran to take some steps in violation of JCPOA.
Very well. Thank you very much. We do appreciate your time.
Thank you.
We're listening to the statements here made by Mr. Rezvan Pour, a political analyst and an analyst of Caucasus Affairs at the Expediency Discernment Council. Thank you for your statements.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Okay, so we heard our guest there talk about some of the different aspects of these stocks, especially at the end. Stay with us. However, we're going to be right back after a quick break. Hello, welcome back. This is our in-depth section. Back in 2015, when the JCPOA was signed and hailed as a landmark agreement between Iran and the world powers, Iran was supposed to gain the economical benefits of this agreement. Yet many U.S. business restrictions actually remained. And that's on top of the U.S. scaremongering of countries and their businesses which wanted to engage with Iran. Now, the U.S. and other countries agreed to lift the economic embargo in 2012 in an effort to curb Iran's civilian nuclear program. Now, the move meant that companies in Europe, in Asia, and elsewhere were free to invest in Iran and trade with Iran. And many were interested in doing so in droves.
Cooperating with Iran's economy is itself an advantage. In this competition, anyone who enters Iran's economy faster will naturally benefit more than the other foreign companies.
This is a true demonstration of the will to try and do and go back to business in Iran.
We are looking forward to come back and to assist in any way we can the Iranians in the oil and gas, as well as many other industries.
If the conditions are required, that we can see a flow of investments in various sectors.
But while the U.S. government agreed to lift the nuclear sanctions against Iran, it imposed other sanctions, like over Iran's alleged human rights violations or alleged support for terrorism. These sanctions barred American citizens and companies from most forms of investment or trade with the country. In theory, those sanctions should affect only U.S. companies, but in reality, the law's reach goes well beyond U.S. borders. For example, U.S. financial sanctions still caused problems and made European businesses and banks subject to U.S. economic punishment. This is how much trade should have happened between the EU and Iran.
First, on the economic sector, we have agreed to enhance our economic cooperation. We will support the Iranians' bid to join the WTO. We have agreed to exchange business delegations and to cooperate on financial issues, on tourism, textiles, agriculture. And we used to be an Iranian main trade partner, and we are determined to take up that position again.
You see how much it covered there? I mean, that's back in 2015 when the JCPOA actually happened. Well, the U.S. wasn't going to have any of that. Former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin actually threatened EU countries from doing business with Iran.
Let me first comment on Instex. I don't believe there's been any Instex transactions. As we've made clear, We are working on a Swiss channel that we have approved for humanitarian transactions. We'll continue to allow humanitarian transactions. We've warned Instex and others that they will most likely be subject to secondary sanctions depending on how they use that.
Yeah, secondary sanctions. I'm sure that's going to probably pass over. Now, do you want to get an idea about the types of contracts that didn't happen as a result of U.S. scaremongering, like you just heard there, and threats? Let's take a look at some of them. Germany Siemens, $1.6 billion. You got that technology firm to have signed that. Boeing airplanes, remember? $3 billion that Iran signed for all those airplanes. I think there were 100 of them. South Korea oil and gas, $1.8 billion. Total Petroleum from France, $4.8 billion. I could talk about 20 or 30 contracts. Well over $100 billion could have been done in sales, potential revenues, but they were lost in that year when these were signed. And after the JCPOA was signed, these, again, to have been actual agreements, MOUs, and also sales to have happened. Well, the U.S. threats, like former U.S. Treasury Secretary, was basic scaremongering. If you were a businessman, how would you react to it? Well, here's one reaction that speaks volumes.
We must be confident in the future while we know that sanctions are still there and the relief is very limited.
Notice the skepticism there. Now, this is back when the JCPOA was signed. So how would a country invest in Iran when that type of pressure was being exerted? Well, let's bring in a guest to make sense out of some of this. Scott Ritter, he was a former weapons inspector in Iraq, where he ran intelligence operations for the United Nations from 1991 to 1998 as a weapons inspector. The U.S. Treasury Department is what we're going to ask from him about how they exerted themselves. Scott Ritter, welcome. You had the U.S. Treasury Department's Office of Financial Assets Control, which made it clear that no payments linked to Iran is going to actually get processed through the U.S. financial system. This is when the JCPOA was signed. So if you receive money from Iran, for example, as a bank or company, you must make sure that this money does not then go to the U.S. or to a U.S. bank or to any U.S. subsidiary. But most international companies actually go through the U.S. So how can the JCPOA even be a deal?
The U.S. has always used the SWIFT code, the banking system, as a mechanism of controlling global economics to put pressure on countries to do the bidding of the United States through the threat of secondary sanctions. That is, if a country, for instance, if the United States sanctions Iran and says you can't do business with Iran, any European country or Asian country that does business with Iran and uses the SWIFT system will be subject to secondary sanctions. This has always been one of the powerful tools that the United States Department of Treasury had, and it's clear that the Biden administration, as much as they say they want to rejoin the JCPOA, don't really mean it, because if they meant it, the Department of Treasury, which works for the President of the United States, by the way, could be told not to enforce these. New instructions could be written.
Okay, you heard it there from Scott Ritter there explaining that to us, and we appreciate that from Scott. And finally, all of this brings us to the current Vienna talks, a repeat scenario in the sense that the U.S. is not lifting all the sanctions, while it is also after dividing the sanctions and in some cases relabeling them. Well, this is what the lead negotiator of the talks from the Iranian side has said about sanctions, in which he said, we have to go back to the same model of the JCPOA.
No, we have to go back to the same model in the JCPOA. They are sanctions which should be terminated, and the U.S. president has the authority to terminate them, so that they should be obviously terminated through executive orders. And there are sanctions which are actually the result of the Congress, legislation. For them, the president could only waive, and this has been mentioned in the JCPOA. So we want all those sanctions be reversed. Whatever imposed during this Trump administration, whatever imposed or reimposed or relabeled during Trump administration, and whatever is mentioned in the JCPOA should be lifted, and they should reverse whatever has been done, and I think the Americans know best how to do that.
land full of business opportunities, an investor's paradise. From the population, which is market-oriented, to natural resources, and to its transport capabilities. Here are a couple of snapshots of Iran's untapped potentials, from sea boundaries to roads, railway networks, and commercial ports. Then comes the natural resources. Agricultural products and crude oil ranking fourth in the world, to natural gas reserves coming in at number two. But the U.S. sanctions regime has bit into Iran's revenues and investors who can profit from it. Iran's GDP growth to have dipped the negative territory, as seen here for the years 2018, 19, and 2020. Iran's auto sector, for example, has been hit hard. Production to have fallen from around 2 million units to half, around 1 million units.
In 2014, the fear that the United States instilled within the global community regarding the potential backlash financially for doing business in Iran prohibited many European businesses from engaging with Iran after the signing of the JCPOA. And so this is why it's absolutely critical that all sanctions are lifted, not that they are categorized, and certainly that those that were reimposed and or were relabeled are lifted.
Okay, in this segment, I would like to welcome Masoud Barati. He is the administrator of the Iranian think tank network, and he has a lot that he wants to say about the talks in Vienna and the JCPOA deal, especially the whole notion of sanctions. Okay, welcome to this program. Thank you for taking the time to come here. My first question to you, give us your feedback on what you think about the talks so far.
My greeting to you also. I'm glad to be here. The talks in Vienna are being conducted within the confines of the U.S. returning back to the agreement. But U.S.'s return to the deal, from Iran's point of view, is for the U.S. to eliminate all the sanctions. In my opinion, there was no need for talks if the issue at hand was solely for the U.S. to return to the deal.
Let's take a quick timeout, listen to Mr. Araghchi, his explanation of what sanctions are all about, and then we'll come back to you to get your reaction on that. Let's take a listen to what he said.
Next week, the most important question is to talk about the sequence, because we have already talked about measures, and we have now focused more on the question of sequence to make sure that the U.S., who has left the JCPOA, should come back first, should lift all its sanctions first, and then Iran would follow after the verification.
Okay. What do you think about what he has said?
The point that Mr. Araghchi is making at the beginning contradicts his ending statement and does not match what he said at the end. When we talk about a step-by-step approach, these opposes the official line and stance by the Islamic Republic when it comes to the nuclear attacks. It may appear that the U.S. on the surface may be moving towards sanctions relief, but we had the experience from the previous agreement when there was an agreement with the P5+1. Although the agreement was the first with the U.S. did all that it could to keep the sanctions and even expand them. It penalized major banks like French bank that it fined $9 billion after the agreement. And then the U.S. and Saudi Arabia established the Terrorist Financing Targeting Center, TFTC, in Saudi Arabia. This was the U.S. Treasury Department's branch for the West Asia region in the beginning of the 2017. This was done when former U.S. President Trump visited Saudi Arabia at that moment. Iran incurred a heavy blow at the end of the year from this organization. This is just one of many examples of how the U.S. not only keeps its sanction structure, but also expands it based on how it sees fit. Even now, during current U.S. President Joe Biden's term, prior to him coming into office, a 50-strong task force specializing in sanctions was set up, consisting of Mr. Cohen and Mr. Nephew and other officials from both parties. This was set up at the U.S. National Security Agency with the aim of developing and expanding sanctions. If we are seeing that the sanctions pressure is not as intense as before, it's not because they are negotiating with us, but it's because of the sanction cycle. Definitely after 1 or 2 years, there will be new sanctions that will be applied or will come about.
Okay, thank you very much. That's some insightful stuff there. We do appreciate your comments, Masoud Barati, Iranian think tank network. He is the administrator of that think tank. Thank you so much for joining us here at Economic Divide. Okay, lots of good stuff there from our guest, which I'm sure you'll be thinking about. At this point, we are going to take a quick break here on Economic Divide, but do stay with us. We'll be right back.
The toughest and most comprehensive multilateral sanctions that the Iranian government has ever faced.
17 specific sanctions against Iran's largest steel.
It's all about the sanctions with the U.S. when it comes to Iran. The U.S. has sanctioned all that it could, from Iranian officials to industries and even Iran's leader.
An executive order imposing hard-hitting sanctions on the Supreme Leader of Iran and the Office of the Supreme Leader of Iran and many others.
How is that for diplomacy? The U.S. calls it the maximum pressure campaign.
That they will face mounting financial isolation.
But even according to their own officials, it has failed.
It's been many years since the United States has had that kind of...
Take Rob Malley, U.S.'s Iran envoy. He has said that the maximum pressure on Iran has failed, and that a return to the nuclear deal is the first step out of the morass. His suggestion? To offer Tehran a Goldilocks-style deal. Enough sanctions relief so that Iran will return to the deal, but not so much that it would leave the U.S. President Joe Biden vulnerable to hardliners at home. The U.S. side has said that they have a list of measures on both sides to come back into compliance. The next step is to sequence these to allow both sides to save face.
Iran has been slowly moving away from its JCPOA commitments and coping with the sanctions. In the past months, with Biden having made no progress in lifting the sanctions, Iran has reached 1 million barrels of oil per day in its oil export, and the capital that was blocked in Iraq, South Korea, and Japan, well, it has become more accessible to it. I mean, Iran is getting past that crisis, it's getting past the COVID-19 pandemic by signing contracts for export of its domestically made coronavirus. I'm saying all this to point to the direction that whether or not a deal takes place, and in this program we've tried to toe the line in the middle by bringing the guests and the viewpoints that we have, that deal or not, Iran is going to move forward. It will progress. So it's time for the West, in particular the U.S., to make its mind up whether it wants to make a deal with Iran or not. That does it for this edition of Economic Divide. For me, Kavit Halfway, and the whole team, it's goodbye. Until next time.
In the limelight.
The FBI has the authority to access privately owned computers without their own knowledge or consent and to delete software, says Scott Shackelford, a writer, in an article published under the heading FBI quietly breaking into U.S. corporate computers. Stay tuned, please, for the details. The FBI has the authority right now to access privately owned computers without their own knowledge or consent and to delete software. It's part of a government effort to contain the continuing attacks on corporate networks running Microsoft Exchange software, and it's an unprecedented intrusion that's raising legal questions about just how far the government can go. On April 9th, the United States District Court for the Southern District of Texas approved a search warrant allowing the U.S. Department of Justice to carry out the operation. The software the FBI is deleting is malicious code installed by hackers to take control of a victim's computer. Hackers have used the code to access vast amounts of private email messages and to launch ransomware attacks. The authority the Justice Department relied on and the way the FBI carried out the operation set important precedents. They also raise questions about the power of courts to regulate cybersecurity without the consent of the owners of the targeted computers.